Welcome, everybody, to All About Symbian. This is Insight number 117. We're recording this on Friday, the 7th of May, 2010. And Ewan is wrecked from election night, I gather. So it is just Rafe and myself. Are you there, Rafe?
I am indeed. Yeah, Ewan just doesn't have the stamina. I managed to last to about 5.30 this morning and then grabbed about 4 or 5 hours sleep before the dog decided that she needed to go out. And I got woken up again. But yes, we're going to rattle through this. Of course, it's about 10 days on from our last podcast, which was focused on the N8. So I know we've got quite a few small items to rattle through this time. But I guess we'll be talking about the N8 and other hardware in future podcasts, because I know we said we'll come back to that. But it's a catch-up podcast this week, isn't it, Steve?
Yeah, the N8 is months away rather than weeks, so there really is no hurry on that. But we had one of my hobby horses, one of the things I look out for more than anything else, is the figures, the stats, the numbers. Quarter one sales figures worldwide for 2010 are out. Nokia and Apple making gains at the expense of others. Just looking at some figures here, Nokia increasing their worldwide market share by a couple of percent year on year to 40% of all smartphones sold worldwide. Obviously, there are big differences in terms of regions, which maybe Rafe can come to in a moment. RIM are number two still, just about, with BlackBerry's at 20% worldwide smartphone market share, same as last year. And Apple are closing fast, up 6% at 16%. I sound like a DJ, don't I, on the chart show. Overall smartphone shipments in quarter one, 54 million units worldwide, up almost 50% year on year. So the encroachment of smartphones into general phone usage, I think, is just happening at more or less the expected rate, but certainly significant. But most people would just be blown away, Rafe, Nokia gaining market share despite their recent hardware portfolio.
Yeah, this just is a great example of how stats can be interpreted in many different ways. You know, the smartphone sort of press or the media storm around it is focused very much on the high end, where of course Nokia has been doing more poorly, but it's well to remember that it extends well beyond that. And you know, Nokia's strength really is in the low end of the market. I mean, the way I would put it is this smartphone market is stratified. Now, you can, you know, define things in different ways, you can cut it in different ways, but really there's only one fair way to say smartphones in general. You have to look at all of them that have this sort of open operating system, in the sense that you can install third party, and I'll use native applications with some hesitation because there's even you know, definition problems there, but I think it's pretty clear when you talk about things like Symbian, Windows Mobile, Apple, BlackBerry, Palm, that they are smartphone OSs as distinct from the feature phone OSs, which are really only able to add applications through something like Java, and in some cases sort of widgets and web runtime type things. And there the picture is still that, you know, Nokia is doing well. I think it's really testament to the fact that a lot of the smartphone growth has been in the lower end of the market. But what's, you know, in one sense remarkable is that Nokia have maintained this market share against very intense competition. Clearly, yes, if you look at the high end, I think you'd probably find a fairly even split between Nokia, RIM and Apple, with some of the others sort of trailing quite significantly behind. You know, notably Motorola, for all the noise it got made about the Droid, is still selling relatively few smartphones. And similarly, you could say the same about Palm. They've got an opportunity to develop in the future. You know, Palm's been taken over by HP, and Motorola still has a, you know, pretty full portfolio on the way. But I'm somewhat struck by the fact it hasn't come back more quickly. So, you know, be an interesting one to watch. So I think the focus really here is on Nokia, RIM and Apple. If you look over, you know, something like a 3-year period, Nokia have come down from a sort of traditional high of around 50% or indeed more, and they're now at the 40% mark. But I think it's just as instructive to look back sort of, you know, say 12, 18 months, and this was really just after the iPhone impacted on the market in the big way with the 3G, and that's when Nokia had their worst ever results in terms of market share, and that's when it started to get towards the 30-35% mark. And of course, these numbers vary depending on who you listen to and how you measure things. So Nokia, I think, has made a substantial recovery by being able to make the investment in the low end, basically because it's been able to stretch its platform where other people haven't been. And looking further forward now, they're making noises about coming back in the high end with devices like the N8, other Symbian 3 devices, and it'll also be MeeGo devices by the end of this year. what we're seeing less clearly is how others are going to get into the lower end. And clearly there's Android activity there. You look at something like the T-Mobile Pulse in the UK, that's £99 on pay as you go. But there hasn't been the real surge of Android low-end devices that I perhaps expected. They've been announced, but you haven't seen them getting onto the market. I think that will change in the next 6 months. And it's possible, of course, that we'll see a lower-cost Apple device. Personally, I think Steve Jobs will try and get at the lower end, or rather mid-tier part of the market, by doing what he did before and lowering the price of the older iPhone as he announces the next generation. And clearly the next generation of iPhone, which is sort of scheduled for the beginning of June-ish, is going to have an impact at the high end. But it's, I think Tommy Ahonen has called 2010 a bloodbath for smartphones, and I think that's being sort of borne out in the stats. Very much so. But just in terms of looking at very short term, you know, in one quarter, yes, Nokia doing well by continuing to increase their market share. There's just a suggestion that RIM is starting to flatten off a little, having enjoyed, I think, quite steady growth over the last couple of years. And there's just a suggestion that the same thing is happening with the iPhone. Apple is much harder to judge, of course, because having just really one product or a couple of products, it tends to be much more cyclical around announcements. But if you combine the fact that Apple are getting into more markets, and so
yeah, they've got the iPod Touch and the iPad as well, haven't you? They're all running the same OS, which aren't
absolutely
really kind of
so their ecosystem, I think, as a whole, is still growing. But there's, you know, perhaps just the first suggestion that the iPhone as a phone device is maybe reaching a plateau mark. That's not surprising, having been in the US market. They're now having to look at to grow elsewhere, and they've perhaps had less success outside the US than we might have expected. So all of those big three are sort of at a crossroads, if you like. RIM is sort of yet to really come up for a response for kind of the touch-based stuff that's still maybe on the way, and has looked at getting in the lower end but hasn't been able to get as competitive as Nokia has, and is still kind of burdened, if you like, by their enterprise thing. You know, we talk a little bit about how youngsters are getting into Instant Messenger or something like that. But there's nothing really, really concrete there. I think they'll remain strong because of their incumbent position, and there will be there's high switching costs for businesses to move away from BlackBerry.
But I can interject an anecdote there. Rachel, my daughter, was looking with me for a QWERTY-based device. I think I mentioned it before. We looked at things like the cheap Alcatel units, and there was a Genio QWERTY from Samsung, and what she really had her eye on was a BlackBerry Curve, and so we knew, we looked at them as what she wanted. But then we looked at the price, and I think they start at well over £150, getting up towards the £200 mark, and then you got to worry about things like the various BlackBerry services. And it was just getting far too expensive, whereas Nokia have just announced the C3, is it, Rafe, running
That's
Series
right,
40,
yes.
With again with a full QWERTY BlackBerry-style device, which will come in at something like £70 or £80. And I think that's a huge price difference when you're talking about a first purchase, £80 versus £180.
Yes, I agree. Clearly, the C3 isn't Symbian, but there are a couple of QWERTY devices as well. And as, you know, just because it's not a Symbian device, it doesn't mean it doesn't apply in this talk, because as we've said before, the lines start to blur. And I think that will be RIM's problem, is that they aren't able to get quite competitive enough. And outside of the enterprise market, where sort of email starts to matter less, you know, there are going to be plenty of QWERTY options, not just from Nokia. I mean, Samsung and, as you said, LG have a good lineup of those as well. And we, you know, talking about Apple, yes, the 4G is coming up. It'll be interesting to see, can that attract a whole bunch of new users, or will it be mainly people upgrading? I think the answer is there probably that a lot of people who wanted to buy an iPhone have bought one. There are some exceptions if you look at different markets with, you know, operator exclusivity. But if you look at the UK, for example, you can now get it on, you know, three of the major operators. And I think there'll be less desire to do new stuff, because it certainly looks like, from the rumours that we've heard about the 4G, and from what Apple has said, it's not going to be a significant hardware upgrade. It looks like the most significant changes may well be in the design and in iPhone OS 4, the software, you know, things like the multitasking, the improved email client, the game support, iron and things like that. But again, there's nothing there that I see that is going to be particularly dragging in new people, not in the same way that I think going up to 3G did when you started adding in native applications and things like that. On the other hand, you look at Nokia, you know, you've got the N8, which Nokia has said is slightly delayed because they're making sure the quality testing on it is absolutely right. And looking further ahead, other Symbian 3 devices aren't going to make it onto the market, you know, until Q3, Q4, equally well with MeeGo, similar situation there. So, you know, it's that we're just in that period where you're saying there's a bit of uncertainty, and I think the competition is going to be very hot towards the end of the year. So, you know, we've actually talked about a lot of other things outside the Q1 results. But it's partly because I think, rather like the UK election, there's rather a lot of uncertainty at the moment.
Yeah, we mentioned just now about how you define a smartphone. And you could equally argue that why not just talk about phones generally and look at the overall figures? Because as time goes on, that will become more and more relevant just to look at the overall figures. And it's quite telling that Nokia's worldwide market share for phones, that's all mobile devices, slipped 2% year on year to 37%, but still a huge, huge majority there, if you like, to use election parlance. Samsung at 22%, second place, up 3% year on year. LG holding third place at 9%. RIM and Sony Ericsson way down at 3% worldwide market share. And HTC, Apple and Motorola are all just others in the noise. So Nokia at 37% of all phones sold worldwide, and with Apple and HTC in the noise. I think that's fairly telling, and that's just looking at the overall phone market.
Absolutely, and that has an effect on things like the market distribution and logistics and purchasing power, which means it applies right across the board. I think the interesting one there, Samsung is doing particularly well. LG has done very well in the last year and the last quarter, but has less going on in the smartphone thing, so may get squished a bit in the next 12 months. So that's one to watch out for.
Yeah. Well, we originally said, Rafe, we were going to spin through lots of news items. We've managed to make the first one last 15 minutes. So we've now only got 30 seconds for each of the rest of the items. No, we'll plough on and see how far we get. The Nokia 6700S is a brand new S60 third edition device that Rafe's been playing with. I'll just give you the brief specs. It's an aluminium casing. It's dimensions 16 mil thick, so it's fairly chunky, I guess. 110 grams. It's quad band GSM, tri band 3G. There's no Wi-Fi and no GPS though, so it's just strictly a kind of a low end device. I'm sure Rafe can give a price in a moment. It is a 5 megapixel camera though, dual LED flash, VGA video recording, 2.2 inch screen. So again, it's quite a small screen. I understand it's TFT and is not transflective, Rafe. So what were your impressions on the 6700?
Well, the interesting thing, we just were talking about feature phones versus smartphones, and this is a great example of something that really blurs the boundaries, because there isn't really any hardware on it that we're typically associating with smartphones, and that's things like QWERTY keyboards or GPSs. The one exception might be the camera, 5 megapixels, Carl Zeiss lens, dual LED. You know, that's pretty good. The results, I would say, for a fairly averaging 5 megapixel camera, there's nothing that special going on here. But the price point of this, it's about €150 in retail, but I actually picked up the one I have from Tesco's Mobile, which is an MVNO in the UK, for £104, which is, I think, a pretty incredible price for a smartphone. We've talked about that before in the sort of things like the 5230, but this is the first sort of slide-all, the S60 third edition, the non-touched style phone that we've seen at that price point. And I think I'm right in saying it's one of the first smartphones ever on Tesco Mobile, which is a pay-as-you-go network. So, you know, a big emphasis there on this is addressing a different kind of market to your typical smartphone. The build quality is pretty nice with the aluminium casing, clearly at this price point, and it does feel a little bit cheaper than some of the higher-end devices, but not nearly as bad as, I would say, something like, I think it was the 5630, which felt very plasticky. It's actually very small. If you put it next to the N97, you know, it's really diminutive. You mentioned the thickness there at 16 mils. Actually, that's pretty thin for a slider phone if you think that something like the E72 is about 12 millimetres. So you're only talking about a little bit of extra thickness, and that's pretty much as a result of the slide. The actual sort of build of quality of the phone, I've been quite impressed by. The slide is sort of assisted, the nice keyboard, nice D-pad. The issue here really is going to be there aren't any hardware features, and the software, you know, is a known quantity. So for a lot of smartphone units, this isn't going to be of any interest whatsoever. But that's not really the point. This is the sort of device that, you know, someone on pay-as-you-go may pick up. It sort of follows in the footsteps of the very successful 6300, 6500, 6700 devices, which Nokia have been amongst their best sellers in the sort of upper low tier or lower mid tier, depending on the way you look at it. So I think it'll be quite interesting to watch how this one does. As I say, not really of interest, I think, to geeks in any shape or form, because it's got not got the extras on there. But, you know, it's, I think, actually probably representative of the transition as Nokia goes in towards doing services, because it's not a complete picture. But it does have things like Ovi Contacts on there. It has Ovi Store, so you can get into, you know, extra content and applications. No GPS means no Nokia Maps, and it's also an older version of Nokia Maps. So even if you just use the Wi-Fi or the network positioning, you're not getting any of the free navigation or extra. Yes, you're quite right. Sorry. And no guides or, you know, route planning or anything like that for free. But it does have quite a few of the extra bits and pieces. It's got things like the, you know, the messaging client on the email from the home screen. It's got the home screen that's just customizable with a contact bar and a shortcut bar. So it, you know, feels like a modern S60 third edition feature pack 2 phone, even if it's nothing too special. I mean, the point here is the positioning and the price. And I think we'll talk about it more in a future podcast when I've had a chance to play with it a bit more.
One big surprise before we leave the subject of this phone was that it's got a 2.5mm audio port. Surely, if this is for the mass market, it needs to have a bog-standard headphone socket. I thought 2.5mm audio ports were for, you know, smartphone buff, people with E90s and E71s, people used to having enterprise, you know, headsets. Well, surely something for to be sold in Tesco's has to have a standard headphone jack.
Well, I was looking at this, and I mean, I agree with you. I think it should have a standard headphone jack, but actually a lot of phones around this price point don't necessarily have that feature. And a lot of it to do is with the size that it takes up. And looking at the positioning of the jack, it's on the top of the unit. It's a pretty tight fit for a 3.5mm jack. People need to realise it's not just about having the sort of extra millimetre room. It's also the longer nose, if you like, on the jack, and the associated spacing around it actually means it's quite significantly bigger. As you might imagine, it's roughly about 50% extra room required. So yes, I do think it's a black mark against this phone, and I suspect it's, you know, related to the fact this has probably been in development, you know, or comes from a family of hardware that's a couple of years old, you know, and so it doesn't have it. But yes, you know, you do look at it and think, that's the sort of thing that I think would have made this handset stand out a bit from its compatriots at the price level and positioning. But as I say, given the what's available to a similar price point, perhaps not a catastrophe. There are adapters available, and I would hazard a guess that people buying this phone probably aren't going to be major music fiends. They're probably going to look at some of the touch devices like the 5230 or the 5800 or the 5530, which come in at relatively similar price points. We're talking maybe an extra £30 in some cases, because, as I say, the £104 price on Tesco's mobile is particularly cheap. The 5530, the 5230 available pairs you go for a similar price. That 5800, a little more expensive, maybe 160, 170. So yes, not really a music-focused phone, so therefore perhaps the headset not mattering as much, even though personally I'd say yes, always put it on a phone because it seems silly not to.
It was quite telling, I thought, that having put up your beautiful, beautiful gallery of close-up shots of the 6700, the news story didn't get one single comment, just showing that the core all-about Symbian readership of hardcore Symbian smartphone fans, they didn't really care for it. It wasn't really aimed at them, which I think is an entirely fair point, but well, zero
comments. I would just add a caveat to that. It's people who might be inclined to comment on the site. It's worth pointing out that that's actually only a fraction of the sort of total visiting audience. You know, you see very familiar names commenting a lot of the time, and we thank you for doing that because it makes it much more interesting if we can have a conversation with our audience. But it's been getting quite a lot of interest. There's been some links coming into it, so we sort of see activity of a different sort. But yes, I think it does say a lot about the people who tend to write and talk and chat about smartphones are not going to be interested in this device.
Moving on, own voice for Ovi Maps has been released for free by Nokia. Now, both Rafe and Ewan have tried this, and we think, well, we should do an all-about Symbian voice pack. But before we come to that, just to give you the descriptions, basically what it does, it's a wizard that leads you through recording, I think it's 58 different samples that Ovi Maps uses, the basic things like turn left, turn right, bear left, you have arrived at your destination. It prompts you for each one, records it, plays it back, checks you're happy with it, and then packs it all off into not only a little archive on your own device for your own use, but also puts it up to the internet where others can download it and have fun. And I guess the idea is, what do we do for All About Symbian? Do we do it in Ewan's broad Scots accent, or does Rafe do a funny voice? So we're still open to ideas there. I'm sure people will come up with some incredible and novel ideas that people will really enjoy using. We just haven't thought of one yet here at All About Symbian. But Rafe, you've had a try with the wizard. How slick was it?
It works very well. No problems using it. The only issue might be the quality on your phone microphone. But, you know, it does add a personal, you know, when you're navigating yourself. I think it's a good example of how the sort of social location team at Nokia are switched on. You know, the idea of user-generated voice content for navigation is a neat idea. You know, so custom voices for navigation is not new. You know, TomTom, I think, really pioneered that. But, you know, being able to do it all from the same device and then being able to share it with the world, I think it's pretty clever. You know, it's a nice solution. I think it'll be nice to see them sort of also offer some commercial packs, so people who want something for higher quality can maybe get that as well. But it's of dubious value in one sense, because, you know, the novelty of having an annoying Cylon voice or a pirate giving you navigational directions does tend to wear off after a while. But I do think the personal level of being able to either record your own voice, or more likely a family member, you know, perhaps a daughter or a son, is a good one. And I have had a couple of comments come in that saying it's excellent. I've got my wife recording one. I put my phone in the back seat and it feels like I've got a backseat driver, and I feel much more relaxed that way. So some people are obviously finding novel uses for it, but it is a good, this is how you should do things. This is a nice bit of innovation that I can't really recall seeing elsewhere in such an easy to way to, you know, this is something anyone can do. It's, you download the application, follow the instructions. There's no messing about with a PC and compiling the right files, etc., etc. Anyone can do this. You know, just the kind of project that I really like. Big fan of this kind of thing, even if I would probably admit that having a pirate going, oh, shiver my timbers, turn left, is not something I want to hear every time I'm going navigating in the car.
Yeah, I have to commit, my standard voice I put on is the, I think, Surfer Dude it's called in English. And it would seem like a great idea for the first day or so, the, hey man, turn left. And after about a day or so, I just got so utterly fed up with it, I must change it, because it drives me mad now. The trouble with all these novelty voices is they are just that, novelties. At the end of the day, I'd rather have someone giving me plain instructions. But yes, it is a slick piece of software on the Ovi store. It's got 103 reviews after about 3 or 4 days, which is just shows how many people have downloaded it and have responded to it pretty positively. The overall star rating was 3 stars out of 5. I guess it's not to everyone's taste then in terms of being a novelty, but it certainly works very slickly. And I know Ewan had no problems at all, and there's a video up on the site showing how he got on and sort of demonstrating it. Do forgive Ewan's lack of camcorder skills, by the way. They are as legendary as his photographic skills, but he is being trained, and we hope to buy him a camcorder at some point. Moving on again, Qt 4.7 and Qt, also pronounced Qt, of course, Qt Creator 2.0, both in beta, and also Smart Installer, some three heavy developer-y tools. Rafe, is it possible to summarise these in a couple of minutes?
Yes, I'm going to do this very quickly because the information is on the site for those who want them. There's also the Nokia Qt SDK, which is really the sort of next generation of Nokia's developer toolkit that works for both Symbian and MIMO development, and really makes the whole process and the accessibility of Symbian development much easier. It's doing it in Qt, which will run on all Symbian devices and also MIMO devices and the MIGO devices that are coming up. With Smart Installer, it's a particularly important piece of technology that will make it much easier to get these Qt-based applications onto older Symbian phones, because it looks at all the dependencies and downloads them if you need them. This was always one of the problems we had with older runtimes on Symbian, things like pips and OpenC, that you'd install one application and they'd embed the sys files for those runtimes within the application. And then when you uninstall that application, the runtimes would be uninstalled as well, which would break another application. This time the Smart Installer should get around those problems. It also makes the sys files themselves much smaller, because you don't need to include the Qt libraries in your application, which is obviously better for consumers, OTA downloads and all of that, but also means you get the most up-to-date versions of Qt and its dependencies. So good stuff there. Qt Creators, which is part of Nokia Qt SDK, and also Qt 4.7, that's the new sort of IDE, which makes it easier to develop. You get some visual design tools as well. Qt Quick, which is the major feature of Qt 4.7, which is kind of the next version of Qt on Symbian 3, We're going to be getting Qt 4.6.2. So 4.7 is the next one. I'd say the big feature here really is Qt Quick, which is a quick way of creating UIs in a declarative markup language, or sorry, a declarative language, which should separate UI and sort of application logic better, and also gives Qt a very powerful sort of UI engine and to be doing things in. So I think we'll be seeing a lot more about that in the future. One of the things that it's particularly good at is it means that developers and designers can work on the same code, and designers don't necessarily need to know any programming. So I think it should improve the UI and applications. As I say, there's more information on the site about all of those. So go and check that out for more technical details, or go and have a look at qt.nokia.com, where there's a lot of details as well. And there's a lot of information on the Qt Labs blogs as well. So developers, you should be checking this out now, because this really is the next generation of Symbian development, and will be, you know, the predominant thing on Symbian 4 because of the big changeover from Avcon. But also, I suspect a lot of Symbian 3 applications will be Qt powered as well, as well as perhaps being ported back to older devices as well. So very important and significant milestone, and this is really getting rid of the albatross around Symbian platforms that has been development, where people are saying it's complicated, it's difficult. That debate goes on and on. I don't think it's as simple as that, but certainly Qt is more accessible and easier to use for more people.
Well summarized, Rafe. Admirably brief. And yes, look on the site allaboutsymbian.com for all the gory detail and screenshots and links. Now, Rafe, did you buy a newspaper this morning? If not, why not? There was a particularly special full page ad, I gather.
Yes, that's right. I did indeed buy a newspaper, and this was advertising the Ovi store. And I think it's interesting because it's one of the first times I've seen a print advert in the UK that's solely dedicated to the Ovi store. Normally it's been on things like maps or individual devices. It's just an interesting data point, especially as in the UK, and I'm sure Steve will affirm this, you see the iPhone App Store adverts nearly every day, and certainly on the Sunday papers, it's nearly always on the back of one or other of the Sunday papers that I get to have a look at. So perhaps suggesting Nokia have a little more confidence about the Ovi store service here. And they did, of course, tie it into the general election and were advertising news apps in particular. But yes, interesting to actually see this coming in, you know, and it's mobile phone advertising tends to be so often dominated by hardware. So to see service being advertised, as we've already had indeed for Ovi Maps, the free navigation offering, nice to see. So just I thought an interesting data point would share on the podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, Microsoft Communicator was announced, and I thought the word communicator just leapt out at me. I thought, oh, there's a new Nokia Communicator, but no, this is Microsoft Communicator, a piece of software. I completely misunderstood the headline. It's described as a unified communications client. It's the first fruit of the enterprise alliance between Microsoft and Nokia. It's now available in the Ovi store, but only for the E72 and E52. I'm guessing that should be the E55 as well, right? Because they're virtually identical. But Nokia do like tying these things down to certain devices while they're in the initial testing phases. Anyway, it ties into Microsoft's Office Communications Server 2007 and lets you view a colleague status and then chooses the most appropriate communication method. So instant messaging, email, text, or voice. Did you actually install this, Rafe?
I did actually install it because I don't have access to the server-side architecture, so it doesn't work for me. But just to explain this is, you know, a Microsoft Enterprise solution for doing communication within a company. So it's not sort of global IM or anything like that. IM is one element of the server sort of services, if you like. But the idea is that it sort of enhances your contact list so you can see what the status of your colleagues are and then make an intelligent decision about whether you're going to send them an IM, you know, send them an email, send them a text, or give them a call. And the idea is that it will make people more productive. I think the interesting thing here is it's just seeing Nokia and Microsoft working together. And we talked about this extensively when the alliance was announced. And this is, you know, the first obvious piece of software to come out of it. There has been a Java version before, and I think this is probably a sign of things to come. Perhaps not of interest to most people, but if you use Microsoft as your sort of base toolset in an enterprise environment, it looks increasingly likely that you'll be able to use Nokia phones for pretty much a comprehensive use of tying into the Office-related services and servers and things like that. So as I say, not much of interest, you know, for the average consumer, but probably quite significant in the enterprise space. And this is, you know, a play really against RIM in particular. It is available, as you said, in the Office Store. It's easy to use. There's no extra license fees involved. People can just sign in with their existing username and password and things will just start working just like that. It is, in fact, only the E72 and the E52. Presumably the E55 compatibility will be looked at in the future. But the only one they've actually mentioned by name is the upcoming Nokia E5. But that's upcoming in the Q3. As perhaps suggested with any enterprise tool, the sort of timings on things are a little different to the consumer world, where things tend to move a little bit more quickly.
Moving on, you may have seen a plethora of widgets appearing in the Ovi store for sites like All About Symbian and The Phone Show and some of Ewan's enterprises as well. In fact, most bloggers in the Symbian world seem to have put out little widgets all within the same week or so. And the reason for that is that Nokia have released an Ovi App Store Wizard. And essentially, you plug in your icons and graphics, and it tells you what size they are in terms of pixels. You then give it up to three RSS feeds. That can be from your blog, your Twitter feed, even your YouTube feed. And then, along with a description of each one, it then builds that either as a full web runtime widget, which you can then, Nokia automatically publish that to the store within 48 hours. People can then download that and access your feeds. And for videos, it either downloads the raw MP4 or goes through to YouTube. If it's a blog post, it obviously gives you the graphic and the headline and the body text. And for your Twitter feed, it currently shows you a mess, but then Nokia are working on that. It just shows you the same tweet twice each time. But it's very much a work in progress. A lot of the core content you see from when using any of these widgets actually comes from the cloud and is a part processed by Nokia, which means that Nokia's server-side improvements, as they tweak the way, for example, tweets are presented, people will just pick up those changes when the users of these widgets will suddenly see an improved appearance. So, quite surprised by the numbers as well. I released a widget done by the Ovi App Store Wizard just over a week ago, and I've seen something like 10,000 people actually download it and use it within a week, which I've been quite impressed by. And I'm hoping that it's not all people who already know about me, because that would rather fall the point. It's never going to be as slick an experience as using the raw sites via, you know, Gravity or a web browser or a podcatching client. It's never going to be as slick as that. But if it gets new people who are new to Symbian, new to S16, new to Nokia, on this platform, new to Ovi, if it gets them looking at our sites, gets them looking at our feeds, then why not? And Rafe, you've tried this, obviously, for the All About Symbian. How did you get on?
I found it very easy to use. It's just a 4 or 5-step process. Doesn't really take much more than about 10 minutes, and you can produce something that looks quite professional. And from a publisher's point of view, any extra channel that you can reach your users through is to be welcomed, especially apps are one of the hot things. And I think, you know, if you get people maybe downloading who aren't familiar with the site, that's an especially good thing. But you also might be able to increase the frequency with which your existing visitors, you know, access the site, give them another way of getting in, or maybe they'll access it when they're bored. It has a nice extra feature in that on the N97 and N97 Mini, you can add it as a widget to your home screen. This OviAppWizard.com is actually based on, I think, technology from Mipin, an app maker that has been around for a while. And this is by no means a unique idea. You know, there's similar things for the Android marketplace and for the Apple iPhone store. It is somewhat unique in the fact that this is sort of Nokia-backed, and they're making it available for free both to individuals and publishers. And it's actually the easiest way to get an app into the Ovi store, because there's no fees to pay to sign up, which there is for the Ovi Publish, albeit only about €50. And it will sail through the sort of approval process unless you're using a dodgy content or a dodgy name. I know, for example, that Mickey over at NokiaUsers.net had problems because they didn't like Nokia, perhaps understandably, in the name of the widget. I'm not suggesting Nokia Users has dodgy content, of course, but you know, there are some rules in place. But in terms of being easy to use, you know, this is as easy as it gets. You know, there's an argument against that, of course, in that it makes it too easy and you'll end up junking up the App Store. I think there's perhaps a decision that has to be made there around categorization or something like that. But at the moment, I think extra content in the Ovi store is a good thing. And ultimately, you know, it's not really a problem of putting too much into the Ovi store. It's making sure that your discovery process is good enough. And, you know, there will always be an interest in an application, even if it's just a handful of people. And you should have that in your app store if you're at all able to. But you need to make sure the discovery process, that's things like search, but also what gets floated to the top for people to view by default, is good enough that it doesn't drown out everything else. And that's an area that I think every app store needs to work on. It's not just Ovi. But I suspect this will mean that we'll see a sort of uptick in the number of news-based widget applications in Ovi store, and presumably that will have a knock-on effect on downloads as well. But, you know, making this kind of easy-to-use thing, getting content into the Ovi store, getting it available to people, that's exactly the sort of thing that Nokia need to be doing. There's, you know, more initiatives that they can undertake, but I for one, thoroughly approve of this kind of thing.
Yeah, but rather interestingly, while you've been just talking there, I brought up my the Ovi app wizard under my own login, and I found out that the phone show widget, the latest change, which is just a minor RSS field change, the whole thing's now been rejected. I get an Apple-like screen saying, this icon has been rejected and couldn't be published to the Ovi store because the icon was not appropriate. And now the icon is a picture of me holding up an E90. Are they objecting to my face? Are they objecting to the fact that I've used an E90, an older device? Either way, I've now got to email the appropriate support address because just to say, find out what the problem is with a picture of me as the icon.
Take it you didn't change it between versions either.
No, I didn't. The icon's been exactly the same, and they published the previous five versions. So, well, typical Nokia messing things up. Anyway, we're going to follow on through, and I'll let you know what happens. And I've just checked on the Ovi store, and the actual original widget is still up there. So the picture of me couldn't have been that offensive. Otherwise, it would be withdrawn a lot faster. So maybe it was the E90 they didn't like. Anyway, so do try that. If you've got an RSS feed or a blog or a Twitter feed or something you'd like to just build something around, you think other people might enjoy accessing and want to try it out, then go to oviappwizard.com. And it's all free. You set up a new account. You can't just use your existing Nokia account, rather, unfortunately. But I guess you could use the same username and the same password, which amounts to the same thing. And do give it a try. And let us know how you get on. I think we're running out of time this week. But we're just a reminder, you can find us on Twitter at Steve Litchfield, all one word. Rafe Blandford, all one word. And Ewan, if you want to give us questions for next week's All About Symbian Insight and feedback, just generally what you think of the things we've been talking about. But for now, I'm running out of breath. I'm going to say goodbye from me, Steve Litchfield.
And it's goodbye from me, Ray Blanford. We didn't get to everything, but check the site for things on Floella, a prototyping tool for developers, the next generation of the sort of Symbian platform in Japan, and also some updates to Ovi Calendar. We'll try and get to them in a future week, but if not, all the information's on the site. And it's just time for me to say goodbye, and thank you to Steve for hosting this podcast.
See you next time, guys. Bye.